Welcome to the Kickback Pod. I am your host, Gavin, joined alongside the producer slash co-host, Dom. Dom, how you doing? Welcome back from Alabama, buddy. How you doing?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Doing good, man. You know, great things are happening on this pod today. It's a very great day. This is a great start to the week because, one, it's you know, the first, you know, July 1st around Cornette. You know what that means? Gab week starts from now to the Saturday because my birthday's on Thursday. Watch your mouth there, third person. Dom, you came back from Alabama. But also, another reason why today's pod is a great pod, because let me tell you something. Contract negotiations are done. All right? Everything's written down. After a month and a half of negotiations between start times, days, and overall just being able to get here, ladies and gentlemen, we got them. Join alongside my radio co-host. The reason why this pod is keep happening, right? I wanted to keep working with his brother. He graduated. Haven't seen him since we went to the lunch. The man was talking about merch. I said, Pat, I need you here first before we do that. With that being said, join alongside my brother, friend of the, not even friend of the show, part of the show, Mr. Patrick Sullivan. Yeah, Pat, welcome to the pod, baby.
Pat.
You contract negotiations are done. We cool. Everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. Hey, did we lose them already?
You guys see me? Okay.
I got you. You're good. You're good.
Okay, good. Because the computer freaked out for a second. Okay.
Contract negotiations.
How much am I getting paid? Let's be honest here.
Can we put some vocals down?
What's the revenue share?
Huh? Resume.
What's the revenue share?
Your resume work. That's but nah, man, this is a long time coming, Pat. For those who don't know, me and Pat hosted a radio show every day from 12 to 2 on Fridays. And then I think the prior year was 11 to 1. Correct me if I'm wrong, right, Pat? 11 to 1 on Fridays?
Something like that, yeah.
It was 2 hours, ladies and gentlemen. I got the luxury to meet Pat in a class that me and him didn't really like the teacher. And that, you know, I think that proved pretty much true and in our ending of time.
Yes, very much so.
But with that being said, Pat, you're finally here. How you doing? Tell everybody what's going on, and congratulations on graduating college. Dom, I know we're like a month and a half late, but this is the first time I got a chance to really talk about here. So, by the way, you subjected yourself for all this because there's no the trolls are coming on joke. Boss, all jokes to the side, I'm happy to have you here, brother. Also, there's some things we didn't get a chance to tell you. Like, for example, there will be a radio show next year. I know that was one of your biggest things you want me to do.
Wait. Hold on. He listens to the pod, right?
Yeah, you listen. You should listen to us, right? This is your job. Fucking doesn't he listen to the pod? So how are you going to go to the
pod? I listen a little bit, not recently.
If he's listening, the only reason I cut you off, if he's listening, this shouldn't be news.
Well, anyway. Hold on. Before we get to the news part, Pat, how you doing? How does it feel to finally be here? And contract negotiations are done.
You know, I'm good. Yeah, still trying to find a job as of right now. Might have a few things lined up, hopefully.
There you go.
That way I can get to work and get some money. Get my own car so I can come out there whenever I want. But, you know.
Please do. You know, I had the luxury, Dom, to go into Kildare's last Friday. Kildare's.
I swear to God.
It's Kildare's. Only you. All right, that's for later. Let's keep it on and go. But
that is not. It is not only me. All my friends say it.
Are they from Westchester? They're not.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. But like, we need to get Trent back on. We need to get Trent.
We will. Because there's actually things happening in the NBA world. But real quick, before we get going, Pat, we'd love to have you here. There's some things I got to tell you. There will be a radio show next year. Guess who's doing it with me? It's not the educator. We love him. It's not the educator. It's not Miss Milano, which will be here soon.
It's not Milano. Is it Solanko?
No, you never gave me Solanko's thing.
Oh.
So, you know who it is? I'll give you a hint.
I can. Don't you have him on Snapchat or something? I thought I gave that to you.
I'll give you a hint. He also works with us here as well. But he was a guest on the pod ones on the radio show, and you enjoyed them. He was only one
Jimmy?
Time. Jimmy? No, it's James.
Oh, James. Okay.
James is part of the pod as well. James is on a 2 week two-week vacation.
Yep.
And he will be back. So it'll be us four. And also, too, that was part of your contract negotiations where you have to be here every day if you can't make it, because James will be here. So there you go. there you go. But yes, I will be doing the radio show with James this upcoming fall and hopefully maybe spring. I don't know. There may be a chance I graduate this fall too, Pat. I don't know. But
with that being spring.
I actually might. After watching everybody go to the job, so I actually might. But with that being said, there's more pressing topics underway. Hey, Dom, I'm going to swing it to you, my friend. I want you to lead on this one. What's going on? Let's start with the Phillies. We got the resident Phillies fan here. Let's go with the Phillies first.
Yeah, no, this. I mean, you and I have talked about it somewhat in depth throughout the weekend, is that, you know, this team, for all the hot and cold and back and forth that people have towards them, are currently sitting a game and a half above the Mets in first place in the National League East, coming off of a series win against the Atlanta Braves, bouncing back from that ugly sweep, which was in part because of a lackluster offense against the Houston Astros. We've talked about it a couple shows ago with James. I don't think there's any reason to panic. I'm seeing a lot out there on social media where people are after every the amount of times this team has been put on as their back, or the amount of times they've been written off in the past couple of weeks, to me is a little overwhelming. I think people need to stop backpedaling on this team and accept them for what they are. This is a good baseball team in a very tough National League. And you know, you're going to, this is what they are. They're a hot and cold team. They're streaky. And this looks like this, what the rest of the summer is going to be like, fellas.
I will say, and then Pal, let you jump in here, for a team that, let's see, lost your closer for the year, and your star player, Bryce Harper, who's been in and out the lineup. Well, I can't remember the last time he played. He didn't play when we went down there, right? Dom, he wasn't there, right?
No, he was out.
So for you to be sitting at 49 and 35, top one half game above the struggling Mets with 3-7 their last 10, I'm okay with it. Listen, I think Phillies fans need to pump the brakes just a little bit. I agree. Listen, the sky isn't falling after one game. It's not. Baseball is a marathon. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And I think too, what James said is, and Dom, James's words hold weight. He was like, guys, relax. Like, these are playoff teams you're going against. And when he said those words, I mean, they went on a nice run. They're 5-5 in the last 10. Yes. I think they're 15-7 since James' statement last time, I would believe. Yep. Something like that. So I would say overall not bad, but who am I to say? All right, I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna give it to somebody that watches every day, who goes with the emotions when the Phillies lose. This day is over. Pat, how you feel about the season so far?
I wouldn't go that far, but
it was like that a couple of times.
Listen, during that Astros series, that pissed me off to no end. But Dom's right. This is a good baseball team that is just streaky as hell, and they've always been. And it bugs the hell out of me. Because you're supposed to beat teams that are on your level or below. Even up, you know, every once in a while you'll beat the team above you. But you're supposed to beat the teams that are on your level and below you. The Astros are on your level. Like, they had the same record you did entering that series. You should beat them in at least more than one game. But you know what's crazy? I saw it the first game of the Braves series when we scored 13 runs. Someone tweeted out, the Phillies have outscored their opponent 14-5 on this road trip. Because all 13 runs came in the one game, and you got one run in the Houston series.
It was, 11 runs in like 3 or 4 innings?
Yeah.
Friday night, they jumped on him pretty good.
Well, hold on.
And then the next day, you completely shit the bed and don't score anything.
Hold on, but let me ask you this then. Let's go. Because All-Star break is upon us, I think, next week, fellas? Next week, All-Star week? Week after. Okay.
Week after.
So that means the deadline is coming up.
That's the end of the month.
Not to the end of the month, but it's coming. And yeah. Like, you look at it from like a baseball, like what's coming up for baseball, that's that outside All-Star break. We know Dave Dombrowski is Dom, as you've been on time and time again, that the man doesn't really make – this is what it is. This is a Dave Dombrowski run team, and you've been, you know, religiously saying that even on to the radio days. Is a move in place? And if so, what is a realistic move? I have an unrealistic move, but before we go there, what do you guys think?
Well – I think there is a move coming. I don't think it's going to be necessarily in the form of a significant trade. I think you're going to see a starter go to the bullpen as this team gets down the stretch. I think we visit history for a second. I look at the 2018 Red Sox, where you know that was a Dombrowski team, and they moved a starter or two to that bullpen. You know, David Price, whose career started in the bullpen, he pitched out of that team's bullpen. Nathan Eovaldi was a monster stopping out of that team's pen in October. And they also had the final outs of that World Series were collected by a gentleman named Chris Sale. So I think, you know, the marquee moves that we see coming may not necessarily be in the form of a trade. That being said, I do think we see something happen at the deadline. I just don't think it's of any significance, but I think they're going to have to play musical chairs with this rotation come August, September, and even into October. And maybe it pays off. You know, this pitching staff, when they are consistent, when they are playing at their ceiling, is one of the best in baseball. They have a lot of optionality. And I think, you know, Rob Thompson and Caleb Cottom can really get creative with how they manage that down the stretch.
Yeah. So I want to agree with Dom here. And I think that probably is going to be one of your big moves around the deadline. But I'd also like to see I want to see us trade for an outfielder.
I agree.
Buxton would be my guy that I really want, but I doubt they'll get rid of him because I think he would fit well with this lineup. But if you don't trade for an outfielder, you need to call up Justin Crawford. And it needs to be
AAA right now. He's killing it.
He's batting .335 with 2 home runs, 29 RBIs, and 26 stolen bases in AAA. You have Johan Rojas, who I was watching the new show with Ricky Pitalico. I was watching that because they put it on TV. And they were like, can you guess what Johan Rojas's on-base percentage is? Mind you, this is a guy that's supposed to get on, use his speed, steal bases, create havoc. Anyone want to take a guess?
It can't be as bad as my own base percentage because I don't got any.
I mean, it's pretty bad. So his on base percentage is .270.
Is it where now, Don? Where's the league average with that?
That's a good question. I don't have that off the top of my head. I have been Gavis, you know,
apparently according to them, it is below league average.
Okay, yeah. That's all I want to
know. I would expect that to be below league average. But Gavis, you know, I've been sheltered from professional sports for the past week.
Yeah, hey, Pat, that man was somewhere north of Tuscaloosa in the woods. Couldn't find him for a week, but luckily he made it out alive.
The average on base percentage this year so far is .316. Last year it was .312, and the year before in 2023 it was .320.
Okay,
it's not great, but it's still not a key indicator that Rojas is anything for you right now.
But here's my
the dude can't hit.
Yeah.
First of all, he can't lay down a bunt, which I don't know how you don't know how to lay down a bunt as a major league hitter. And you're not drawing deep counts to get on base.
Yeah.
As a speed guy.
I have a thought.
So now my question to that though is
hold on. One second. Just to that point, so to get to How is your skill set getting on base and reaching heaven when that's your worst part of your game? He's made some plays in the field, not consistently, that were like, okay, that's great. But, like, you get, like, all right, say what you want about this person. At least he got on base when he did. Roman Quinn was all right. If you compare
Roman Quinn, even though he got hurt all the time, Roman Quinn was great because he got on and used his speed.
All right, my question there though is what's the big difference between those two? Because to me, they're the exact same player.
Except they are the exact same player. Yeah,
Roman Quinn came in with a better offensive skill set. So at that point, I look at approach.
If your skill
set goes to Pat's point of, hey, you're not drawing deep counts.
But also, yeah. if
on this team does.
If you're going off the basics of your skill set is to get on base and to wreak havoc in between a base pass and anything like that, and you're not doing that, I look at it from like that. Now, granted, there's more metrics. Like, I agree with both you guys. Like, the draw between the two is different. You know, it's the same.
Yeah, player. I'm not disagreeing with anything.
I know you're not. But I'm just saying, like, to me, like, if you want me to answer, like, I just look at, like, how is your skill set something that you can't even do? Like, we can't see it because you don't get on for us to even see that. To your point, Pat, which is like, yo, they don't draw deep counts, they don't do anything like that. But at the same time, too, it's like, yo, you should be like, lay down, like Roman Quinn lay down a bunt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got on base. Like it should, like, it's almost like that bottom half of the lineup is just a joke.
So now, all right, but then here's a question I continue to ask is, why is there so why are people so up in arms about the bottom of this lineup when you're paying 3 to 4 guys who are towards the top of your lineup to be highly productive? I'm not saying the bottom of the lineup shouldn't have any production, but I feel like we're crying poor when, you know, in reality there's, you know, I get it. You want all 9 guys to be able to have some level of offensive output. However, you know, there's a lot there. To me, there's too many. There are too many bats on this team for people to be that up in arms about Johan Rojas. You know, I get it with Brandon Marsh, because Brandon Marsh has showed flashes that he can, you know, his production can increase. You know, but the problem
he just hasn't shown it yet.
Yeah, and the other thing with Brandon Marsh is he hasn't gotten any better. He hasn't got still the same. He's productive in spurts, but he's the same player that came here in 2022. You know, his splits are still relatively the same. You know, so I get the pressure there. I look at Johan Rojas and I see a guy that, in all reality, and this is Pat where I agree that, hey, you know, they need another outfielder. Johan Rojas is a very good fourth outfielder, and if it at his ceiling. And if the – what was that, Gav? And here's the thing. If reality is, if the National League didn't have a DH, you'd have Rojas off the bench, off the pine, as a pinch runner, you know. Hey, he's in for the 9 spot every once in a while when you get into the later innings. But I see both sides of the Rojas case here. I agree with what Pat said, but I still think that people are making too big of a deal about a Brandon Marsh when you have Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, Trey Turner, who's playing pretty well right now, by the way. You know, JT, Bryce,
Mr. Double Play.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing to your point about why people make and this is my ick with Phillies fans. And Pat, I'm talking about you for a second. Not you, but just the fan base. We call the bottom line the daycare. We give this lineup so much like praise just because we like them as people. And I said, but damn, at some point we got to judge what we see. Like, at some point.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how you feel about Bryce or Stein, no matter how you feel about Brandon, listen, they're high quality people. That unfortunately, I look at Bryce Stott and say, your best moment so far being in the majors. Granted, you had a great average maybe a couple years ago, But I understand last year that there was a little issue with the wrist or thumb going on in your swing that was impacting your swing. So I acknowledge that. But also, too, your biggest moment since you've been in the league, it was at almost 4 years now, guys, four almost one five since you've been in, since up in the majors, is your biggest highlight is the grand slam in the playoffs. And outside of that, you've kind of just been another person that's here. Looked at Brandon Marsh and I said, okay, and that World Series run, you were actually something. You were actually hitting the ball. You were getting on base. You were hitting doubles. The last time I really seen Brandon, and I know I don't watch the Phillies day to day, so Pat, correct me if I'm wrong when I say this. The last time I saw Brandon Marsh on Noble was when I was sitting down there with you and he hit the double down to the off the right field wall. So, like, I look at these guys, right, and these two in particular, to your point about the top of the lineup is heavy. And we pay a lot, and we invest in a lot. You're 100% right. We did. One of them is not even here, which that's another conversation I don't think Phillies fans want to address, but I'll damn sure love to have it with them, is when are we going to acknowledge that Bryce Harper, that, you know, 13-year deal, it looked great, but now it's become an issue of, dude, you're becoming a Joel Embiid because you're barely here. So now that's another – he's not there yet. We're talking about a guy in Joel Embiid who
– listen, with Bryce, though, Bryce at least got them to a world. I mean – It wasn't just him.
But I'm just saying, though.
He always shows up in the playoffs, too.
But that's – but here's the thing, though. You're right. But now another issue is, dude, you're not even here. Like, you're not even – like, think about it, right? When Bryce
Harper – to be fair, you can't really blame him when half of his injuries come from a hit-by-pitch. He can't really do anything there.
You're right. But track me on this, though. It's like, yo, we got to find a way to keep you here. We got to find a way to keep you. You get what I'm trying to say? Like, my issue with Bryce Harper is, and you're right, Pat, it's nothing he can control because injuries, you know, in all sports, listen, we don't want nobody getting injured in any sort of level. But I'm just saying, if I'm a Phillies fan, I'm like, yo, it starts with you. You're MV3. You were the guy that hit the opposite field home run to send us to the World Series. You were the guy. And also, too, you're the guy where we blame when stuff doesn't go right. So I look at you and say, you not being here, right? And I understand. But, like, I think the reason I'm saying Joel Embiid, I'm starting to draw them comparisons, is you had Tommy John. You're not a pitcher. I understand that Tommy John is a serious injury in baseball. It's like, it's a serious injury. I don't want to be hearing that you're still having problems with your elbow 2 years. And I'm not saying that you can't, but as a fan, like when we heard Joel Embiid was having knee issues, we're like, oh, damn, like how'd you go to the Olympics and then you come back and you can't even walk for Philadelphia? So I look at Bryce Harper and say, what is going on with you? Now, you're not telling, like, same thing we can say about Paul George. What happened with you this year that you looked a shell of yourself on the court? Bryce, it's, what is going on with your elbow? I understand, like, I can understand, like, if you're a pitcher and that means a lot more in your motion, you're a first baseman. You don't even play in the field, which I also think that you probably should move back out.
Well,
but you get
Tommy John is why he moved to first.
Yeah, I understand. But what I'm trying to say, though, is, like, but what is the issue now surrounding that? What is the issue?
I think it just boils down to durability.
You think so?
You know,
I also think it was, swinging the bat, the motion of swinging the bat. He said he couldn't do it anymore because the injury got so bad.
Does that alarm you guys? Like that? Like to me, I look at. Go ahead.
Yeah, it kind of does, but the same thing happened to Stott last year.
Yeah,
but so, like it happens every once in a while. There's not much you can do about it.
Stock can go missing in the lineup, and we're talking about it starts with him. None of this – not listen, you could – the band could be playing right now, but if three is not on the field, it don't matter. It does not matter what happens in October. It starts with him. We talk about Bryce Stott, his finger, and yes, does this bat matter? It does. But I could miss a Bryce Stott, but I can't miss it. And three strikes fear in the other pitcher's eyes.
I get it.
So that's how I look at it. I'm like, yo.
But, you know, also one player isn't going to carry a team on baseball. Other players need to step up when he's gone. We're not doing that. Nick Castellanos is back to his old ways of swinging the things low and away.
Well, I mean,
JT Realmuto is Mr. Double Play. Brandon Marsh has done better. He was batting, what, .90 when we did the last radio show? He got it up to, like, .260-something. So he's done better. He's kind of stepped it up a little bit, but you're not going to need that from a bottom of your lineup guy. Yeah. You need the top of the lineup guys to step their shit up.
Correct.
Also, too, down to your point.
And about what happened to Mr. June?
It's not his month this year. June, July. But he's
he was Mr. April in May.
He's Mr. April in May.
Yeah.
But this is what Kyle Schwarber does. If you're looking at Schwarber and saying what happened to him, he's kind of on par for what he normally does. It just happened earlier. So here, and to Dom, to your point, why are we looking? Because I think we look at the bottom of the lineup, right? We talk about Blaine, and we talk about who do we look at, right? Your star is not here. You look at Trey Turner because that's the next guy with the highest amount of money. He picked his play up. Trey Turner is doing exactly what you brought him here to do. Could he do a little more? Maybe. Go ahead, Vet.
He could cut down on the errors. Okay, I think that's the big issue with him right now. But, you know, he's batting over 300, I think, still. So he's doing it at the plate. And let me just go on a quick rant here. Why do we have Buddy Kennedy up here? What does Buddy Kennedy provide to this team that Max Kepler does not? Why are we playing Buddy Kennedy? Why are we playing Buddy Kennedy in left and sitting Kepler and playing Kemp at first? Put Kemp at first and put Max in left, which is his natural position. Why are you bringing up Buddy Kennedy? Yeah, you can't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
Can't hit water if he fell. Where's he falling, Pat?
No, he's 100% right.
I mean,
Buddy Kennedy's a great story, like, you know, Melville guy.
That's
a great story and all, but I don't care unless you produce a little bit for me. At least one or two hits.
But here's the thing. Can we stop? And once again, back to the fan base. Oh, but he's from Melville. He's a local guy. I don't get on me. That don't mean stuff to me. It doesn't. Dom, you know exactly what I say. Every time when someone tells you something, I'm like, don't mean shit to me. It don't. Because let me tell you, if you can't produce for my team, I don't care if you're from or right here. I don't care. You could be my brother. I don't care. If you're not producing, I don't want you nowhere near. The fact that you brought Max Kepler and he's not playing,
You lied to him. You straight up lied to him. And he said it, too. He's like, they promised me I'd play every day left field for this team. And they haven't done it. He's not great by any means, but he's stepped up for you every once in a while. He said he's got a big hit every once in a while.
Go ahead, Doug. Find a word.
No, I agree. I don't get why Kennedy's up here. You know, it's clear, I think there's two things that have been exploited. First, the Phillies farm system is not what people think that it's been the past couple of years. Right. Yeah, you've gotten solid production out of Mick Abel, but you look at the other guys they're calling up now. Yeah, look, Otto Kemp, since coming up, has actually contributed, and
he's serviceable.
Yeah, he's serviceable, and look, the expectations for him are not high.
No, because you never heard a thing about him. You didn't expect him to be this guy that came up and did stuff for you right away.
Bingo. But second, and most importantly, and I think, you know, this conversation culminates to this, is that the Phillies' window to win is significantly shorter than people thought it was. You know, you have a core that's in its 30s. You look at your pitching staff. You know, Aaron Nola is when he comes back, is going to be coming off of a significant injury off the 60-day IL. Yep. You know, you probably only have, after this year, one, maybe two more good years of Zach Wheeler. You're going to have to make decisions on Kyle Schwarber and JT Realmuto come
– and Ranger.
Season and Ranger. So I think, you know, I get why people, you know, to kind of circle back to the Rojas point. Yeah. Now this is where I understand where people are making a big deal about every ounce of this lineup, is because look, this year and, you know, maybe next year, depending on how, you know, the dominoes fall, could be the end of the window for this group to win. You know, and the reality is, you know, and like I said, I got a lot of respect for Dave Dombrowski. He is a Hall of Fame executive, but outside of his Detroit teams, everywhere he's been, the window to win has only been 4 or 5 years. And this is year four. Yeah, this is year four of the regime, year four, year five. So, you know, you look at the timeline. Yeah, the window could be starting to close a little bit here.
So Which makes me think Dave's going to take a big swing. He's going to take a big swing at the deadline, give up prospects that he's not supposed to give up, and
let me ask you, try and extend that window. What prospect is he not supposed to give up, though?
Well, Painter, obviously.
Well, Andrew. I don't know how they're going to deal Andrew Painter. He's like he's damn good with injury.
Yeah, Aiden Miller.
I'll give him the catcher.
Yeah, he's solid. I wouldn't give him up.
Especially with JT declining like the way he is, I wouldn't give up on Tate.
I've seen Aiden Miller play. He's going to be a very good ball player, but he's expendable. You know, to me, if you're all about win now, you know, I think you move him. I went and saw him twice last year when Jersey Shore came down to Wilmington. He's a very good ball player. He's not this gen. I personally, and this is just me. I don't think he's this generational talent that some people make him out to be. But you know, if they can keep him, he's going to be a very good player. And then
Crawford's another guy. You don't want to give up on Crawford.
I don't think they're giving up Crawford whatsoever. I don't think. And I totally agree. You cannot give him up. I mean, you know, back to what we were saying earlier, he has been a monster in AAA. You know what? I would actually, depending on how things shake out, give him a shot after the deadline. Give him a shot after the deadline. Give him a shot in August. Get him some ABs. See where it goes. And if not, you know what? You send him back down. You know, he's a guy for next year. But, yeah, don't get me wrong. There are some prospects that, yeah, you can't afford to give up. But it also shows you, look, this is not a deep farm system. Which is another hallmark of a Dombrowski organization is, hey, it's not, you know, we don't have horses in the stable like that.
It was decimated when he got here because of Klintak, but you know,
I don't blame Matt Klintak for that. Listen. People can blame Matt Klintak all they want. He's part of the reason they got Bryce Harper here. I'm not saying Klintak was a good GM, but also too. You know, I think that this farm system just – and this is a greater rant. This farm system is the product of the Phillies organization continuing to not go with modern baseball.
Yeah.
And the owner who listens to his fans is a big part to blame for that.
Dumbass. I'm sorry.
Quickly, I will say, like, we talked about Rojas and Marsh being the same players that they were when they got here. Kevin Long's a major part of that blame, I think. He was supposed to be the guy to fix Marsh, and he was supposed to be the guy to teach Rojas how to hit. He hasn't done anything.
I completely disagree. I completely disagree. Listen. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
That's true.
You can lead a horse to water, but they paint
Kevin Long like he's this great hitting guru.
He is though. But here's the thing. Look at the guys he's developed.
But here's the thing though. He's not in the batter's box when they're at bat.
That's true.
I get the frustrations with Kevin Long, but look at who the guys developed. I mean, Jeter, A-Rod.
But he
helped take those guys to the next level.
But here's
All right, so let me ask you guys this: Who's going to come in that's going to do a better job?
Nobody, probably not. You can't. You can't fit. But that's true. Some people are just broken. You ever said like, yo, Markel Fultz's offense was never the same when he got here. So there's no matter what shooting special, no matter what bat specials, no matter what you do, I don't believe in specialists anyway. I just think, if you're not good at something, you're not going to be good at something. Yeah. And if these brothers can't swing, That's it.
Don't get me wrong. The Kevin Long frustrations are vindicated.
It's valid.
To say the guy hasn't done anything here to me is ridiculous.
You can only do but so much.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, especially in this sport.
Phillies fans, you got your frustrations out?
Okay. Yes.
You guys good?
Yes.
The Phillies start a 3-game set versus the Padres tonight. That will lead all the way up until Wednesday, July 2nd and July 4th, you know, Gavin Day Part 2.
They
have a series versus the Reds. This is a good series coming against the Padres right here, NLS team. So let's see how they fare against them. They've done pretty well versus playoff teams. Coming up next, the NBA, my home, my sport. Since the last time we was on this great pod, Dom, me and your predictions weren't correct, but we did get the winner right, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Congratulations, you guys. You finished off an incredible season. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander gets the finals MVP. You party down whatever street that was. Why would you have, like, fences up high? Like, you're supposed to – I don't know. That was a little weird to me. I thought interact.
Security.
I respect. I'm just saying, you know, interact a little more. But – following that, since that happened, we had a trade in the NBA. Kevin Durant is a Rocket. Jalen Green is a Sun. And what's that guy's name? Oh, yeah, Dylan Brooks. He's a Spurs, too. Also, what also happened in the NBA as well, during the finals, Tyrese Halliburton went down with an Achilles injury. There's been a lot of talks about the state of the NBA. You stay on being Achilles injuries and everything like that. I will say that it's unfortunate, but I think it's nothing you can really do about it. It's just bad. It's kind of what comes to the game. ACLs concussions come with football. Tommy Johns come with baseball, and Achilles and ACLs injuries come with football. I mean basketball. So it sucks. But I will say though, what didn't suck was this NBA draft. The first round. I'm not gonna get into the whole first round, but the top 10. Mavericks take Cooper Flagg, no surprise. Dylan Harper goes to Spurs. VJ Escombe comes to the Sixers, along as the fourth pick, Con Canupo, goes to the Hornets. Ace Bailey, the Diva, goes to the Jazz. Trey Johnson, the small forward out of Texas, goes to the Wizards. Pelicans get Jeremiah Fears. Nets get Edgar Demon. Hopefully I said that right.
Yeah.
The Raptors get, thank you. The Raptors get Colin Murray Boyles, and the Rockets get Malu, I don't know how to say
Newport.
That. But he is going to the Suns due to the trade. Real quick, Pat, I didn't get a chance to really talk to you about it as much. We actually didn't get a chance to talk about it at all. Ace Bailey was a top 3 draft pick going into this draft pick, and refused not to work out nor meet with any teams, but had a preferred destination where to go. Now, people blame NIL. I really don't. I blame overtime, and I'm going to call out the organization as it is. I blame overtime. For those who don't know, overtime is an organization that highlights like the up and coming generation from high school, and they kind of track them all the way through college until they get to the, you know, to the end destination for men's and women's. I think it's a great idea for women's basketball. I think it highlights the game. I mean, Dom, it helped me, you know, discover Paige Beckers, and now look at the knowledge I've learned from just discovering her and the up-and-coming talent that they have coming through. But I hate it for men's basketball, and here's why. You're giving entitlement and calling them stars for people who haven't sniffed a single – like, don't even know what stardom is. And here's the issue I have with overtime. Yeah. And this is what I don't think is – an NIL problem. NIL, I'm always going to be on four-team NIL because, for starters – NIL helps, you know, because the moment you tear your ACL or do something, that a college can be like, you have no use to me, and they cut your own scholarship. So you're still kind of getting that small financial stability. I'm not going to get an NIL. That's not the whole point. Overtime follows these young student athletes from high school, sophomore year of high school, sometimes even a little bit earlier, and you're calling them the star, and you're giving them these guys these TV like these little shows on YouTube, and you're following them, and you're calling them recruit, and you're just giving them all this mass publicity that gets to the head, and then they think they're the next up. Then look at I hate to say, but look at Mikey Williams. Mikey Williams thought he was untouchable, and you know the incident happened where regardless of how you wanna you want to document the incident, it happened. You shouldn't have cared the way you did, but it happened, and now you're not on the same trajectory as you used to be on. But we saw exactly what – I want to blame this all overtime, but we saw exactly what happened. Ace Bailey was, I believe to be followed by overtime over his young career before he got to the pros, and calling him next up and calling us and the grit and down. We sat on this pod and we talked about it. Raw natural talent. A lot of things need to be worked on. But for his size and his athleticism, that was something that we thought here at the 60 could need. But we don't need that damn attitude that he carries. You, my friend, have not done anything. You did not have the same hype. And this is why I don't like overtime. You're hyping up people who honestly may be trash. Look at Julian Newman. Trash. What does he do now? All he's known for is doing on 1v1s and getting angry at people and trying to fight somebody and going on Twitter and complaining about how they disrespected him. No one disrespect. The only disrespect happened was we thought that you were going to be something in the world of basketball. That's the only disrespect. But I blame overtime for this. People call it ungratefulness. I don't want to say – I want to say that everybody is ungrateful. I just think how – listen, and I'll open the floor here. If you don't want to work out with a team, fine. I'm all for that because – and Dom, and here's why. If you get hurt at these workouts, what are you going to do for me in that regard? I understand not working out. I understand that. You just had a whole 15, 20 games to watch me on film versus other opponents.
Yeah,
30. Yeah, I am at my, you know, and then, you know, you had the opportunity to watch me. What do you need to see in a 1v1 workout? I understand, but damn it, you got to meet these teams. These teams are investing millions and millions of dollars. They're about to build a whole franchise around
you. The interview process is crucial.
That's crucial.
And unlike Ace, you know, I think that's one of the things that where VJ Edgecombe really stood out to a lot of teams was the, you know, he proved through those interviews that he is an A-plus professional at such a young age. And that can go a long way with some of these guys' draft stocks, whether it's the NBA or the NFL.
But look at even like the number one pick, Cooper Flagg. We knew Cooper Flagg was going to go one since the moment we stuck on that Duke.
Yes.
How do you handle yourself is different. We didn't know you, Dom. You pointed out, yo, Ace barely didn't make the tournament. The fact that your team did not make the tournament, and I grant, and we know basketball's a team sport, but we look at you, your buddy went 2. You were going to go 3. That would have been great for Rutgers basketball for y'all to go back to back in the draft. But you dropped 39 points and got smacked. So your production isn't you basically show 30 NBA teams who you are. You're just a meat player. You're just a meat player. You wanted to go to a team where they always gonna run through you. Honestly, Dom, and this could be the slight bias I have in the Sixers. If I'm VJ Edgecombe, I am thrilled to be here. I get to learn from Paul George, and I get to learn from Joel Embiid, and I get to go up with people with Tyrese Maxey, and I get to have Jared McCain as my running mates for years to come, right? I get to have those guys, those gentlemen. Also, too, you still have Kelly Oubre. This was the best situation for Ace Bailey to come to, and he talked his way out of it. Like I said, I agree with you not wanting to do workouts because what else did you need to – listen, I'm going to take a quote that we know. What else you don't need to see what you already know about me? You just saw it for 30 games. What else do you need to see? I'm okay with that. But, dude, you got to meet these teams. You got – because it's not even about – the draft, it's about when that first contract is up, whether you're good or not. And I don't think Ace Bailey's lifespan in the NBA is going to be long. It's about, yo, I got to come off for the future, right? I remember Kenyon Martin on Gil's Arena was talking about, he's like, yo, it's not so much about your first team. It's, damn, this front office met with me 3-4 years ago, and they loved me for my personality, and you got to see my skills were in the NBA. I could go there. I'll have teams for years to come. You burn a lot of bridges. And can we stop with the whole LeBron James Bronny saying, well, he was trying to do it? No. We knew that Bronny James was going to be a Laker because of what there was no secret behind it. You, the way how you're going about your camp and whoever was in his camp, you guys try to give entitlement to someone that doesn't have no lick of NBA experience whatsoever and did not generate the same hype as like a LeBron draft class, a 2003 draft class. You wasn't the same level. If he was at Duke, right, and I'll go back to the year Zion was. If he was like Zion at Duke with a team that made the tournament.
Oh, nothing. I just sent Pat something.
That made the tournament. You guys would mean something. You would mean more. People would respect. You know, like, yeah, he should go. I hate you guys.
For those that are wondering, I sent Pat a meme to capture this conversation accurately.
I hate you guys.
Maybe it'll go.
That was a really good meme.
Thank you.
As a relative basketball guy here,
it's actually a compliment to you, by the way. So don't worry about it.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I also would look at Ace's agent.
Drew Cooper's dad.
I think some of these agents definitely play, a bigger role than they should with some of these younger guys. You know, I'll say this: when you're it's one thing if you're represented by, you know, Rich Paul or somebody at Clutch where they're established, or, you know, go back to when Leon Rose had his agency. That's one thing. A lot of these kids nowadays are getting around the role, and you know, when we have Jordan Ingram back on, this is something I'm definitely going to touch on with him. But a lot of these kids, especially here on the East Coast, are getting around the wrong handlers. And this is a Gavin, to your point about overtime and such, this is a basketball specific problem. So I totally agree. You know, I definitely think there's a lot of character concerns now about Ace, but I also would look in, or I would implore people to look at how much of it is him versus how much of it is his agent. The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle, but
You mentioned that, Dom, because I was going to bring up the exact same thing. You probably saw the same exact video I did on Twitter of his agent in his car flexing chains and a new watch.
Yeah.
I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, right? But he seems like Ace Bailey is around the wrong person. And I said to my dad, I was like, don't be surprised if it comes out in a few years that Ace Bailey's agent was either taking money from him or doing something to get, better around.
But look at where his son ended up. And Sheree Cooper's not even in the league.
Yeah.
Look where his daughter ended up.
Okay, so
I think he represented his daughter as well. Yes. I understand the WNBA is harder, but neither one of your kids. If there's one thing I like to say about LeVar Ball, right, is once he got them there, that was it.
Yeah, he fell back.
LeVar got it right. I will say that.
LeVar got it right.
As much as everyone hated him and made fun of him for what he was doing with his sons, he did it the right way.
He got them to swipe
no swipe on Louisville.
But no, to Pat. No, go ahead, Pat.
He got them the publicity that they were going to get, that they needed to get at that young age. And then once they got to where they were, to Gavin's point, he let them go and he let them be their own person. And I think as much as we gave him problems and the media gave him problems for being, you know, this overbearing father out there and crazy.
Yeah.
He did it the right way. I will say that. Looking back on it, he did it the right way.
I would say, and Dom, you've been around, you know exactly what I'm about to say here. Where I come from, because this is a serious point. Where I come from, right, the world may view what LeVar Ball did as outlandish and over and too much, right? Where I come from, we look at that as a caring father that's actually active in his parents' 100%. Lives, and you don't have a lot of them. So I look as I understood what he's doing. It was a little out there a little bit too much, yeah, but at the same time, too, there's one thing that you cannot say about LeVar Ball is he did not care for his kids and he did not set them up for success.
100%.
There's two things you cannot say about that man. There's two things you cannot say about the man.
I totally agree.
And Dom and Pat, for the motion I made you guys, and especially in the space that you've been in, Dom, you know that means a lot.
Back to Ace, because I wanted to touch on this.
We definitely got to get Jordan.
You're listening to this, you know. Once again, I give your foresight all the credit in the world. But Jordan said this on the last show, Gavin. And you know, I've seen this plenty at the high school and grassroots level when I was in basketball. And by no ways is this, you know, knocking anybody specifically, but this is the truth. Remember what Jordan said? He said, dude, so, you know, there's a lot of these coaches, whether it's an AAU or high school, there's a lot of these handlers that, you know, they, for, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, there's that lack of, I don't want to call it professionalism.
No, but
no, like I'm trying to think of the word for it. But Jordan, you know, Jordan put it out there as, hey, you know, look, you got a lot of these guys now, they're walking on the sidelines, you know, all goofy and stuff. And, you know, it rubs off on the kids. And I think that's why you see a trickle up, so to speak. It goes with, it starts with the kids. And, you know, you point out overtime gets some of these kids when they're in eighth grade.
Yeah.
There is a kid in the Philadelphia area locally who he's, you know, he was an overtime kid in eighth grade, went to a very good prep school program, rather on the rise prep school program. The coach of that program is now a college coach, and then went to a very prominent high school program that's produced multiple NBA players. Now he is back with overtime and doing overtime elite. I'm curious to see where that goes.
And the reason why I play on overtime,
and it's not just them, by the way.
Look, no, you're right. Thank you.
It's not just them. And I'll say this, having been in basketball and now being out of it and having gone through two other sports where I've seen how kids are handled and such, like this, I'm going to fall on the laurels of, hey, this is a basketball-specific problem, and it's not just overtime. You know, there are a lot of these social media channels and such. And listen, some of them do a – look, from a content perspective, overtime does an excellent job.
They do.
They were very avant-garde during the pandemic. And I'll say this because I have some old friends over there. You know, they do get some good quality basketball people. However, I think the kids have manifested, you know, the substance that is their platform a little too much. And it's culminated into excessive autonomy.
I just want to say, and hopefully, you know, our third, you know, saves me something to eat too, because I would love to have some. But I would just say, Dom, you're right. It's not just overtime. I only play on overtime because I know what they're trying to do. Remember when LeVar Ball pulled LaMelo and Jello and put them overseas, right?
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, because, well, we know why Jello got pulled out, because he wasn't going to play at UCLA anymore, most likely. Yes. And LaMelo, he didn't want LaMelo to go to school. It was obvious. It was obvious reasons why. Here's the thing, right? Thank you. Here's the thing. Overtime is like a way for them to somehow skip going to college in a way. And it sounds crazy.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's far-fetched at all.
And that's why I have an issue with overtime. Because you know why I think, and this is coming from someone who's a college student and hates going to school. But the one thing they teach you right, Dom, is how to handle yourself. I think it was Club 520 and said, Jeff Teague said, yo, Justin Edwards is a phenomenal player. Just got messed up in the Kentucky system. That's why I like that. You got these guys that are McDonald's All-Americans that come in. They're the hottest thing coming from the high school. Some schools will treat you as if you are the biggest thing out of sliced bread. And then there's some schools that will look at you and say, that is cool. You're not going to be that here. You will be this. And then I think that's what helps them go to the next. Look at Cooper.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, absolutely. And that's what surprises me with Ace. Because, you know, I've watched Steve Peichel, the coach at Rutgers, who's a phenomenal coach, by the way. I've watched him since he was at Stony Brook. He is no pushover. To play for him is very demanding. I don't think anybody's coming out and looking at him because, yeah, as you pointed out earlier, on the flip side of Ace, you have Dylan Harper. And Dylan Harper has turned out just fine throughout all of this. So that's where Gavin, to give more credence to your point, and I look at, you know, overtime. I look at his Ace's camp specifically and say, okay, where's the disconnect here?
Well, the disconnect is you have a father, say the same thing about John Moran's dad. You have a disconnect that a father whose kids, who I'm not going to call them failures because they both had their own success in the collegiate wise, but in a professional,
they're failures.
They're not failures. No, but in a professional, like staying in the next level, failures. Only because, and then you have a dad that's trying to, all right, I got this guy. He signed with me. Oh, he actually, okay, well, hold on. I've never had this before. To Pat's point, I'm not going to say the chains are his. I don't like getting into all that stuff.
Yeah.
But if Pat's not wrong, that'll be interesting to see. But to Dylan Harper's point, right, his dad was an NBA player. They know how to handle themselves.
Yeah, when you come Dylan Harper, that situation's completely
– that's different.
That kid's got a head start from the time he picks up a basketball. You know, it's to a much larger degree, not to, you know, spill into football just yet, but, you know, you're going to see it with Arch Manning. You're going to see it with Arch Manning whenever he decides to enter the NFL draft, whether it be this year or next year, is that kid has been, you know, he's been developed a certain way to where, hey, when it comes time for the draft process, when it comes time to become a pro, he is going to have a step ahead of most of these guys because he's been around people that have walked his path his entire life.
Yep.
You know,
as a matter of fact, Don, we talk about the next upcoming. Yo, Kion Anthony is going to be a problem when he gets there. Hopefully.
Yeah, he'll be solid.
He'll be solid. You know, and then everybody laughs at Bronny. Let's see if you're laughing 2-3 years from now. Let's see if you laugh about Bronny. That's what I'm saying. Like, you could tell who's an industry kid and you could tell who's not an industry
Absolutely.
Kid. And the difference is if we just saw it. Yo, your teammate went 2 and you went 5. Y'all both end up in the same place, except meaning like you guys didn't make the tournament, but how you handle yourself is differently. Also, too, I will say though, right? Yo, you gotta check that entitlement.
This is where
like I'll take it. I'll ace like all right. Buddy from the Raptors, Colin Murray Boyles, right? That went to the Raptors. He kind of looked a little displeased. Yo, someone said on Twitter, like, yo, I miss the day when they were just happy to hear their names called, right?
Yeah.
Like the idea of just having your name called, you going there and shaking commissioner's hand. I never know how that feels, but going up there and shaking commissioner's hand and then you know, getting your jersey and going on. Those days are over. I look at it from two ways. One, the NBA is hard to stay in, right?
Yes.
So, like, I look at these guys as, like, damn, I got that here. This is going to be hard to keep it going. You know what I'm saying? But also, too, you have another point where it's like, yo, just be happy because you're like, yo, there's only, what, 59 picks?
Yeah.
And they spent one of them on you. Just enjoy the ride. Enjoy the process. You only get to get drafted once.
Absolutely.
And well, Ace Bailey's going to look back at this, whether he has a 10-year career or a short career, he's going to look back and say, damn, I could have been in here longer. I could have did things differently if whoever was in my camp wasn't acting the way they did. But that being said, real quick, Dom, I know we got on a topic of basketball. VJ Edgecombe goes to the Sixers. They also got Johnny Broom. I think there's a
Jani Broom. Yeah, Jani Broom.
I like that pickup. That's a great guy. Listen, I like Edgecombe because he said something that I like their players. Like, I'm bought in on defense. I know I can do one side of the ball. I like the other side of the ball. The Sixers could use a really tough defender, especially at the guard position. He's 6'5". Correct me wrong. I think he's 6'4", 6'5". That's in today's mind, that's 1-4. And arguably 1-5, depending on the center is. If he can, you know, and which I think he will, turn into an all NBA defensive caliber player, that's great for the Sixers. That is great for the Sixers. So I would say, let's see how this goes. I think the Sixers got it right, I hope. I think on both picks they got it right, and now it's just see who's going to be the best out of the draft. I mean, you're always going to have the Cooper Flag. I'm not even looking at Cooper Flag. There was an interesting thought that someone said the Cooper Flag is not what they think the best pick wasn't one. It was from, you know, between 2 to 2 or 4 were like the best players to come. So I don't know. I think Cooper Flag got the best situation. You're around, you know, Hall of Famers. And same thing here with VJ Edgecombe. You have players, and if you're Dylan Harper, I look at the Spurs and say, you got De'Aaron Fox and you got Stephon Castle. Why bring another type player in? But then again, you're looking for the long term. You could say De'Aaron Fox may not be the guy long term, but Stephon Castle, and Dylan Harper with Wemby is something you like to see. I don't know. All I'm going to say is, I think the Sixers got it right. Hopefully, they got it right. But, man, Ace Bailey, you just showed how not to handle yourself, dude. You just try not to. Go ahead, Pat.
And I will say that we were talking. Me and my dad were talking about it while watching the draft.
Legendary.
To Dom's point, it seems like VJ Edgecombe is pretty much won the draft interviews. He boosted his stock a lot through those interviews, and they said it on the broadcast that he's a great person as well, which, you know, everyone loves that. Like, no matter how good or bad a player is, if you're a good person, that goes a long way too. Like, this kid, I think they said, donated a lot of his NIL money to create, like, scholarships. Whereas, you know, what's his name?
Ace Bailey?
Ace Bailey, yeah. Sorry, I blanked for a second. Ace Bailey just doesn't seem like a very good person. I could be completely wrong in saying that.
He's entitled.
But he lets his ego and his entitlement get in the way too much.
And listen.
Like, I saw it after he was drafted by Utah. He's like, I didn't even know Utah was interested in me. Well, maybe if you went on the workout and the interview, you wouldn't know that they were interested in you.
Like I said,
instead of just saying, oh, I'm not going to you, go to attend these things because they're going to be interested in you. And like to Dom's point, it might not be your first team that you start out with, but if you're a free agent and teams are looking for you, they're going to avoid you like the plague because you treated them badly in the drafting process.
I mean, think about it. Considering that the Hornets, and this is no diss to the guy they picked, you could have went fourth. Yeah. And you, it could have been you, LaMelo, and Brandon Miller. And they said, no, thank you. So I will say to the future, it's going to be difficult. You better hope that you're the best thing to ever come out of Utah. And I will say to both, I understand wanting to get buckets. I do. But for you to care how you did and then to think you were going to make it to where you wanted to go, that just shows that you don't really care about winning. You really don't.
Yeah.
So I'm not a fan. I'm not going to wish the worst for him. I'm not going to wish the best for him. I'm just going to tune like every other NBA player. Oh, that's right. You play for there. So moving on to keep it real quick in the basketball world, I want to give a major shout-out to the WNBA. As today, they announced that they're expanding the league up to 18 teams. Guess what cities are getting them? Cleveland is getting a team. Cleveland, that's for you. No? Okay. And the Pistons, not the Pistons. Hey, Pistons fans, guess what? You're going to get a WNBA team as well. And Philly, I reached out to a friend, and I haven't heard back from her, but we talked about when the city of Philadelphia lost out on getting a team. They and Toronto got theirs.
To Toronto.
But, hey, all good in 2030. I'll be at whatever the stadium's called to watch them play. And I hope that Josh Harris is not running the team. But unfortunately –
no, he is. They have ownership stake in it. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Josh Harris is running the team. Don, that goes back to our conversation yesterday. Crazy how tide turns from a quick conversation we had the other day. But on to the football world now. Here we go. There was a big trade. I'm sorry, go ahead. There was a big trade that happened this morning in the football world. The Dolphins, in two respected trades, same team. The Dolphins are sending Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith in return for a late round pick. I don't know what the pick was.
Fifth round,
thank you. And they're getting Minkah Fitzpatrick back. So basically, they're just swapping what they did a couple years ago. I think the person in play was Mike Wallace, maybe. I think it was an offensive piece. So that's interesting to see. I didn't expect Pittsburgh to be on the, you know, the market for another corner, considering they just signed Darius Slay, and you're hoping that Joey Porter Jr. takes a step up. Now you're looking for safety. In the previous $1 million with the game episode, 4 years ago, Jalen Ramsey said that he wouldn't mind taking a step aside. He said, I wanted to be like Charles Woodson, where he would play everywhere. I won't play everywhere. That was one of his biggest issues with our defensive coordinator now, Vic Fangio, was because he didn't let it line up on the inside. So I'm interested to see how that goes. Good for the Steelers. They made moves. I think while we were also gone, Dom, I think Aaron Rodgers decided to tell everybody that he's going to ride up into the sunset this year, which makes sense on why Pittsburgh is doing everything they're doing to make all these moves. But, fellas, let's not ignore it. There's still some issues in Pittsburgh they have. They still got to sign T.J. Watt to a deal, and I don't know if that's
going to happen. Yeah, he's not happy. He's still not happy. He's
still not happy, and he's okay with missing out. And, listen, as great as T.J. Watt is, I also think T.J. Watt's a person who, if you move now, you can go find another T.J. Watt-esque edge rusher in years to come. But it's just a sign. Maybe these most recent moves will make him want to be here, considering that they have better help in the secondary. I would say, and I'll slide it off, it's going to be interesting to see the AFC North, considering that the Baltimore Ravens got Jaire Alexander as well, and the moves that they made, and the fact that the Bengals still can't get half their pass rush signed at all. They don't have Shamar Stewart still, and they don't have Trey Hendrickson. It doesn't look like neither one of those guys are going to walk through those doors anytime soon. The Browns will be the Browns. Perfect timing. Yeah, so the AFC North between Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Fellas, Ramsey and Johnny Smith are Steelers. Dallas and backs up Pat. Frymu, what are we thinking?
Well, I'll start. I think this move makes a lot of sense for both teams. Start with Pittsburgh. Their secondary is coming off of a lackluster 2024. They were 23rd in coverage grade with a 72.5% completion percentage. That's the franchise's highest mark since the 2016 season. And they also surrendered the 7th most passing yards in the league. Now, Jalen Ramsey may be a few years removed from an all-pro campaign, but at 30 years old, he gives Terrell Austin that scheme versatility that this secondary needs. He's most likely going to play on the outside in their base package, and I also see him moving inside to the nickel in sub packages. I look at Jonnu Smith. You know, he reunites with Arthur Smith, who's been with him just about every step of the way throughout his career. Smith was his tight ends coach in Tennessee when he first came into the league. He also played for him in Atlanta. And what makes Jonnu Smith even more intriguing for Pittsburgh is that he's coming off of his best season, Pro Bowl season, where he set the franchise record in Miami for receptions, receiving yards, and receiving touchdowns for a tight end. With the moves Pittsburgh's made on offense this offseason, I like Smith as a guy that draws a lot of gravity in the middle of the field when they have to air it out. And he really fits Smith's system well, especially in that RPO game. You know, gives him versatility for some of those, I call them copy RPOs, where you're running your tight end under the line or into the flat. So he's he's also very dangerous after the catch. He's great at avoiding tackles. So I think Pittsburgh gets a good bang for their buck in this deal. As for Miami, this secondary needed a lot of help as well. Maybe Minka Fitzpatrick's all-pros have come more off of reputation rather than performance and production. But at the end of the day, he's a reliable tackler. He's a significant presence in the middle of the field. And since 2022, he's one of three safeties that's consistently placed top 10 in both coverage and run defense grade. You can't ask for much more from a safety. So I think this is a win-win for both teams.
Okay.
I think this, is good. It's not great for both teams.
It's okay.
It's just an okay deal. You know, you got two aging corners traded for each other, and Steelers get another tight end out of it. You know, that's the way I see this. I will say that, the Steelers defense is probably going to be a lot harder to throw against with Ramsey on one side and Slay on the other. And that's going to be a lot of trash talk coming from both of them. So that'll be interesting to see. But, Minka goes back to where it all started for him. I kind of like that, and I'm okay with that. But I feel like the Steelers won the deal more than anything because they gave up Minka and a fifth round and got Ramsey and a tight end. A really good tight end.
I want to just highlight, too, just around the span on TJ Watt. He's not the only one holding out. Michael Parsons is not holding out, but I think he is at camp, but he is still looking for a new deal. Terry McLaurin, the sides are far apart from, per sources, Adam Schefter, that Washington and Terry McLaurin are nowhere near deals. And also, too, like I reported earlier, the Bengals still have some stuff to figure out. So I guess my question is that – go ahead.
I will say – I said this earlier with my dad when we first found out Trey Hendrickson was sitting out. I think he's making upwards of $50 million something this year. Play out the deal. If, you know, friend of the program were on here, she'd say the exact same thing. You're making money, an insane amount of money that only some of us can only hope to make one day. We're probably not going to. You're making an insane amount of money to just play football.
That was
go out there, make the plays that you need to make. Make your $50 million or whatever it is. And then at the end of the season, you can complain about wanting a new deal. Don't complain when you still have $50 million left on the table. I get it. You want your money and you want to be paid as the top, you know, defensive player or offensive player in the league because that's what you are. But still, you're making an insane amount of money. Play out that deal, and then you can look ahead to the next deal.
I agree with you, but the only thing, the reason I used to take that stance too, until Dak Prescott happened and that injury happened. And then you kind of look at it and you're like, all they got says, yeah, we're done with you. Mm. So I'm all for. I listen, I understand where you're coming from. I also seen it on the other side of things where, like, yo, if I go out there and like Earl Thomas is another one. Remember, Don, where Earl Thomas went out there and he tore his ACL and then he gave the Seahawks a finger as he was riding by. And because he already knew you're not going to bring me back. So and a position like on edge rusher where you're constantly, you know, sliding it and pushing and your legs can get trapped underneath somebody. I know it comes to the nature of the sport, but also too, I know Trey Hendrickson thinking long term. I'm not stepping on that field without a long term deal. But I do agree with you in the sense you should play to count. It's a catch 22 because I understand from both parties.
Yeah.
Well. I mean, I go back to, you know, we mentioned T.J. Watt earlier. I think this move is very much to put the Steelers in position, you know, cap-wise to get him paid, you know.
What is the number? Because that means you're talking about someone that is he going to be the highest paid defensive edge rusher? That's who I think.
I don't know if he's necessarily going to be the highest paid, but here's the thing. You know, this is in terms of money is a premium position, you know, in the league right now, you know, edge rushers are getting paid, you know, more than they ever have. So, you know, if you have it, it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, they're doing this out of survival, but it's out of survival. You know, look, you have a guy like him, you know, you're going to do everything you can to keep him, whether you want to pay him the figure that he wants or not. You know, it becomes a push comes to shove situation.
Just to read off some of the names on that list of the edge rushers too. You have guys, Myles Garrett set at $40 million, Danielle Hunter's at 35.6, Max Crosby 35.5, Nick Bosa at 34, Josh Hines Allen at 28.25, Brian Burns at 28, T.J. Watt at 28, Montez Sweat at 24, Rashawn Garrett at 24, and Trey Hendrickson at 21. So I look at this list and I say, there's no way in hell that Josh Allen Hines should be making just amount as close as what T.J. Watt is saying. I mean, the bar is set at $40 million, and the guy that's making $40 million arguably is just as important as T.J. Watt, and that's Myles Garrett at $40 million. He has Myles Garrett as like type, you know, effect on the team. So I say not consider.
Not
Henderson. I'm not talking about Henderson.
I know you're not. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. Myles Garrett is. Listen, to be fair, I've said this on the radio show. I don't think anybody should be compared to Myles Garrett. That guy is generation.
But I'm just saying,
not a knock to TJ at all.
But for Edger, like there's guys on this list. Like
he should be up there though. Absolutely. He should be up there.
I like Danielle Hunter. I do like Danielle Hunter. Maybe 35, maybe same thing. I just don't think that Josh Hines should have more than him.
I agree.
Everybody on this list deserves some money for sure. But I'll look at, like, yo, is Josh Allen, who would you rather have, T.J. Watt or Josh Allen Hines?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have T.J.
T.J. So and then, like, I look at Trey Hendrickson with 21. I mean, dude, you my biggest thing with Trey Hendrickson, you know they were going to pay Jamar Chase or T. Higgins.
Yeah, I mean that's like, also the Bengals put themselves in that.
They did because also
not saying those guys didn't deserve to get paid, but there's a way to manage that with the
game. Didn't Burrow get his? Burrow got his. Yeah. Yes. So
that's well, it's all well deserved. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
No, everybody, listen, everybody on that Bengals offense is well deserved. But if I'm looking at Trey Hendrickson, I'm like, dude, what else did you expect? And this is no disrespect you because you it's coming down. But I'm just looking at you. I'm saying, where in the hell were you sitting there thinking that I can somehow get this X amount with this X amount already going on my roster, on my payroll. But we'll have to see how that ends out for all teams. Listen, we want to see these brothers on the field. I think if you had to ask him whose deal gets done first between those two, I'd probably go TJ Watt just because.
Yeah, I agree.
I go with TJ Watt. I'm also, too, they know if they don't get him. It's not a big loss, but it hurts concerning to what you're building there in Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh's ceiling is as high as Aaron Rodgers can take him. That's that.
I wanted to go back to Pat's point. You know, as much as I think this deal is a win-win for both teams, and I believe I said this in the group before we hopped on air, I don't see you know, this move really propelling either of these teams further than what I have them expected to be. You know, I think the Steelers, you know, listen, I have a lot of respect for Coach Tomlin. You know, they have a good roster, but I still think that's the third best team in the AFC North. And, you know, they are a fringe playoff team. You know, I look at the Miami Dolphins. Yeah, when they're healthy, that's a pretty good football team. But, you know, I'll save the bulk of it for when we get into football content as we get into August and September. But, you know, the Dolphins are to me the third best team in the AFC East, you know, give or take a few different factors. But if they're healthy, they're pretty good. They, you know, so, you know, I don't see, you know, these moves for either team really doing anything to get them to that net, you know, to get them to that net, to nope. that next threshold.
Nope.
I will say to your point, I agree with you. The Steelers are probably the third best team in the North, but you know what they're always guaranteed to get is a winning record.
Yeah,
I mean, Mike Tomlin always gets a winning record.
Absolutely.
If he doesn't, hell will freeze over.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Let's be real. They're still probably going to make the playoffs, but they're probably going to be a one and done like they've been the last few years. I'd be surprised if they go on a deep run.
I guess I'll tease it here because I've been working on my 2025 projections. I do not have the Steelers as a playoff team. I do have them with a winning record. You know, the one thing, and like I said, I got a lot of respect for Mike Tomlin. He has built, you know, he has established.
He's the standard. He should be the standard.
No, listen, he has established the culture of the Pittsburgh Steelers organization goes back 50 years. You know, it is timeless. You know, I got a lot of respect for Coach Tomlin and what he's done to maintain it and put his own spin on it. There's a lot of teams in this league that would kill to have him as their head coach. That's a very good coaching staff. You know, he's got over there. He always fields competitive teams.
Yep.
But, you know, I will say how many of those, and this is where, you know, Steelers fans might get a little upset with me, but how many of those winning seasons have turned into playoff, you know, not just playoff success, but playoff appearances. You know, listen to me, you know, going now 10-7 or 11-6 and not making the playoffs. I mean, look, it's great on paper, but you know, I'd go back to
21 because you remember when the Steelers was on that run, and remember I kept telling our lovely friend in our one group chat, I'm like, dude, you guys aren't really like that. And then what happened? They started losing, they lost to Washington, and then the trickle goes down, and you end up getting your ass kicked by Cleveland in the first round. And I kept saying that, and that's been the stigma recently with Mike Tomlin. Is I'm a Mike Tomlin supporter. I don't like the Steelers. I love Mike Tomlin. I think he's a standard. I agree, he's a standard. But I will say this. Wow, that's really coming down. I was saying, no, I'm like, I don't want nothing to happen. But I'll say this though, that's not going to cut it no more. It's not. Getting a winning record, it looks great on you because it keeps your winning percentage higher. But you're not really going to the AFC Championship games. You're not doing nothing with it.
And that's not necessarily that's not his fault. To him either.
It's not. But I'm just saying, but like that's if you ask a citizen what's one thing that irritates them, right? And we know one directly, it's yeah, we do the same thing every year. It's kind of like the Ben Simmons offseason cycle. He just released his workout video. Next thing you know, people start getting hype on Ben Simmons. And then next thing you know, something happens. So I say in football terms, we look at the Steelers. The Steelers go on a little hot streak. Then they have like this little cold, dry spot in the middle of the end, toward the end of the season. And then they're in the playoffs. And you're like, yo, we can't win the first game. So that happens every year. You can't let that happen. It happened last year, and it happened, and I hope it doesn't happen this year. I love Mike Tomlin, but I see it happen this year. You don't have him as a playoff team. I don't see them missing just because of who else is around, unless another team, you know, takes a step up to take out their playoff spot. I don't see them as division winners. I get that to Baltimore, but I don't know. I would say it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's tough when you have – You have two Super Bowl contenders in your division. You know, listen, the AFC North is the toughest division in the league as it's been for the last couple of years. You have two Super Bowl contenders, in my opinion, in Baltimore and Cincinnati. If Cincinnati puts everything together and everybody's there. And then, you know, I'll say this with the AFC, there's a couple teams on the rise this year that I believe could surpass them. You know, one is in a weaker division, and I think they're a sneaky talented team and they have a favorable schedule that would allow them to make the playoffs. And the other has a new regime and a young quarterback who they put some pieces around him and they gave him an offensive line and he's got a pretty good defense. So, you know, look, there's no reason that the Steelers can't get back there. I more so have them not there because of what else has happened in the AFC. You know, what did you do to get that much better, you know, to stay ahead of the curve? And I mean, look, time will tell. Maybe Aaron Rodgers gives us, you know, one last good year. You know, I definitely don't think it's going to be an MVP season, but you know what, for what Aaron Rodgers.
They don't need him.
Yeah, he doesn't need to.
Be a Brock Purdy, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there is that chance there. But, you know, I think at the end of the day that this move does not, you know, put them any further along than they already were.
No, it does not. Ladies and gentlemen, it is storming out here. That's why I keep looking. So, and we got a good pod going on, so I don't want to lose it. So, we're definitely going to expand on this a little bit more for sure. But Pat, we end, you know, commentary sense is finally over. So now we can tell you what we've been doing on this side. We end the pod with a little either not even so much a debate. It's just like to get like kind of like get to know us. We've done a mixture of things between sports and just non-sports. So, what I'm going to say is real quick, so we can get you on your way. Do you listen to podcasts?
This podcast or just podcasts in general?
Well, we know you don't listen to us, but
I do. I just haven't been keeping up recently. I'm a little behind.
I mean, okay, a little, not really. But give me your top three podcasts. Doesn't matter which ones you listen to. Just give me your top three. Who does Pat like to listen to? And then we'll get you out of here, man.
I mean, you know me. I'm more of a music guy than I am a podcast guy. So I'll give you a top one because I only listen to one podcast, and it's The Pod.
The Pod, all right. The Pod.
Actually, no. Two. So, because it's that one and this one.
He doesn't listen to this one, so it's just one.
You little. Okay.
I love that. Dom, podcast. If you got three, give three. If not.
Yeah, my top three. I guess it's more so because they. Umbrellas because they do a lot. The three that I primarily listen to, they do. Like more, they have multiple podcasts under one roof, so it's an umbrella. I love what Pro Football Focus does. I know those guys over there; they do great work. That you know, even if you're not into the data and analytics, they do a great job. Whether it's fantasy content, betting content, college football, NFL draft, so they're a great conglomerate. So I try to keep up with as much of their stuff as I can. On top of that, what's changing the game in college sports right now? Even prior to the NIL era is the On3 network. They have a bunch of good podcasts, whether it's Andy and Ari, whether it's JD Peichel. I'm blanking on one of their basketball guys right now, but I love anything that On3 does. And then my third, these are guys, this guy is somebody that in what I want to do going forward, somebody I look up to is Warren Sharp, Sharp Football Analysis, does an excellent job of using data analysis to not just tell, you know, stories of the game, but give fans a betting edge or the edge in their fantasy drafts. So those are like my top three. They're not really podcasts. You know, so there's a lot of, I could go on and on. I'm a big podcast guy. There's a lot of good content out there. You know, for fans, for media, for whomever it is. So yeah, those would be my top three.
For me, I'm going to rock out with $1 million worth of game. I love Get a Little Wild. I love the messages they put out there, especially the younger generation. They're trying to change, you know, the mindsets of one with their own experiences.
You know, I coached Wallow's nephew.
You did?
I did.
So
Wallow didn't show up until after I left, though.
You almost got me to say something, but $1 million with the game. I'm gonna rock out and say 7 p.m. or 7 a.m. in Brooklyn, 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, with Carmelo Anthony. I really enjoyed that podcast. Just listening to Melo's stories and finally getting a chance to hear from Melo's point of view on some things. He was really mad at Kevin Garnett. I will say he really was after hearing that story. And finally, I miss, and I heard Pat that they actually may be coming at the pod.
That's a whole ass line. I'll believe it when I say it.
What is the pod?
It's Boston Connor, Ty Schmidt, and Tony.
It's all the guys from the Pat McAfee show, minus Pat McAfee.
Okay.
Except for Pat. So basically everyone in the back and then them, so they all talk. So apparently the pod is supposed to be coming back.
They basically do what we do, except they don't talk about sports as much. They just talk about the random things on the internet.
On a player note, there are two guys I wanted to add. Ryan Clark's podcast is incredible.
Yeah, The Pivot. I met them.
Incredible. And I listened to this. I listened to a few episodes. I've only seen up until this point. I was only watching clips, but then I listened to a couple episodes on my 15-hour drive down to Alabama overnight. Julian Edelman's podcast, Games with Names, is incredible.
I had to check that out.
Yes. I've seen that every once in a while.
And I'll say this: you don't have to like football. I call it the Ted Lasso of podcasts because I love Ted Lasso. I don't know diddly squat about soccer, but Ted Lasso is a show where you don't have to know anything about soccer to like it. You don't have to know anything about football to like Julian Edelman's podcast. It is an incredible storytelling podcast.
Speaking of,
and the guests he gets on there are just insane.
And he finds a way to get get stuff out of them that you wouldn't expect. It's an incredible show.
I will say too, to wrap it up, for all my basketball heads, if you like basketball with a little bit of joking and laughter in, that's also the one with Carmelo Anthony. But also check out Club 520 with Jeff Teague. He's also
getting that's a great one.
That's a great one. And if you want, for all my hardcore basketball fans, Gil's Arena. But with that being said, make sure you go check both of them out. Go check them all out. With that being said, Pat, the contract. It's finally inked in.
It's been renewed.
But yeah. It costs us a lot. But that being said, we will catch you guys in the next one. Enjoy you and make sure you have a great week. Make sure you rate us a 5-star on Apple Pod. Tell a friend to tell a friend that the pod is going strong. James will be back in a week or so. But Pat is here. About time.
Good to have him back.
Yes, great to have him back. Hey, Don. While it's hurting a little bit, though, but we got to do it. With that being said, I'm Gavin. That's Dom. That was Pat. This is the Kickback Pod signing out. Peace.
Thanks, bye.